Playing with Lonzo and Drew is going to make Zion's transition so much easier.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com and Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter as always at RedRock_Beeble and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Today we are doing something a little bit different which ties in a bit with fantasy. It's more gambling related, but there is going to be some interesting stuff that we talk about in today's show. We're looking at the over-under season win totals for all teams across the NBA. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. To talk about the season over-under totals, the win totals, I am joined by my Basketball Monster colleague, Greg Ehrenberg is here.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Greg, welcome back to the show, ready to talk season win totals.
Yeah, this is one of my favourite pods that we do. We talk about the team totals. And unfortunately, people can't see my face because we're having some bandwidth issues, but everything else, pretty good.
Yes, as per usual, there's internet problems here in Australia as we try and get ourselves into the 21st century. We're still a bit of a distance away from that, but let's talk win totals, Greg. Let's start off. We're going to go in alphabetical order here. Let's start with the Atlanta Hawks. I was using the win totals from Pinnacle. And the Atlanta Hawks over under is set at 33.5 wins. Greg, I'll let you kick this off. What are you looking at with the Hawks?
So a couple of things. First of all, the numbers that you gave me were pretty significantly different than the numbers that we have over here on the DraftKings sportsbook. So there are some numbers that I bet that are like significantly different from here, and actually made me feel good about some of the numbers I have because they're just different. Like I have Hawks over 31.5 wins. I slightly like the over 33.5 also, but I don't have really a strong conviction on that number.
Yep.
This is mostly just kind of a pro Trae Young, pro John Collins type play. I think that they're a team on the rise right now. Trae Young looked really good last year towards the second half of the season after really struggling in the first half. Like there was a point in the beginning of the season where Trae Young for sure looked like a bust. Kai was on his high horse. He was all excited. He was celebrating how bad Trae Young was. And I think that he's done the full 180 on that. So
yeah,
this is more team on the up and up, but not a number 33.5 that I feel confident betting.
Just for reference, the Hawks did win 29 games last season. I think you can make a legitimate argument that outside of internal improvement, the players that they got in versus the ones they let go, they may have gotten worse in that situation. Deadman leaving, Kent Bazemore leaving for Evan Turner as a replacement. There are downgrades there, but you know, is that going to be offset by Trae Young and John Collins? I do think that they can improve their win totals from last season where they won 29 games. I don't think that they get to 33.5, so I would take the Hawks as an under for this this upcoming season, even though they are going to be one of the most fun teams to watch and Collins and Young are going to have that tremendous fantasy upside and fantasy value, I just think they will go under the 33.5. For the Boston Celtics, they are set at 48.5. Greg, we are in agreement with the Celtics here. We are both going the under on the Celtics. They won 49 games last season. They switch out Kyrie Irving and Al Horford for Enes Kanter and Kemba Walker. They also add locker room chemistry and subtract nonsense from last season. So we're both going the under here. I'm only going a little bit under, so not massively under that. I've got them at 47 wins. But you can easily make an argument that the Celtics will go over this if that chemistry, all those chemistry issues, and if Haywood steps back up, they can go over this number.
So I like the under quite a bit here. Okay. I just think that going from Al Horford and Kyrie Irving to Kemba Walker and whatever else is going to be starting at center is a pretty significant downgrade, particularly on the defensive end. Like Horford was so much the soul of their defense, and now they're going to be playing Kanter at center. Like Kanter's such a... he's so bad on the defensive end that that's where I really think they're going to be hurt. To your point on the chemistry thing, but it's so hard to quantify that and know how much of an issue that was in the past. And I tend to think that it was a little bit overblown. And then another thing I'm just going to add to this is there's three teams that in general I just really like to take an underweight or kind of fade type stance on, and that's the Boston Celtics, the New York Knicks, and the Los Angeles Lakers in general. There were three of the worst teams in the league against the spread last year, all significantly under 500, all missed their over-under by a decent amount. And it's just because they're public teams, the public really likes them, and that's the side that the general public likes to steam. So just in terms of fading the public, I always feel that those are teams that are a little bit overvalued by the betting market.
And that's another thing we do have to mention here is when the bookmakers set these lines, they're not setting it thinking that they'll win 48 games. They're thinking, which way can we get equal money on either side of this line? So they might actually, their win totals might project the Celtics at 46 wins, where they go, well, people are going to historically bet up the Celtics, so we're going to put that line higher so we can try and get an equal amount of action on both sides so that they end up winning the most money that they possibly can. So that's the way that they look to set lines. So we're both going the under on the Celtics. Kyrie Irving, we mentioned him, his new team, the Brooklyn Nets, they come in with a total of 43.5. Last year, they won 42 games. So we're replacing D'Angelo Russell with Kyrie Irving. Of course, we're not including Kevin Durant in this. There was other changes there. Alan Krabs went. Damari Carroll's gone from this team. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson gone, if anybody cares about that. I see the Nets going over. You see the Nets going over as well. Greg, I think they're decently significant over. I'm looking at them. That's 43.5 is 1.5 game improvement from last season. I think they can be a 3-win better team this season with Kyrie in place of D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, so it's a little goofy because I have a bet on the under for the Nets win, but that number's at 48.5. Okay. So when you sent me the 43.5 number, I was like, well, those are way different numbers. 3.5. I would assume that book, Pinnacle, probably had a little bit higher because that's actually the Nets that have taken a decent amount of under bets, and that's been going down at pretty much most books. So with the Nets, I do think that they're the 43.5, but I do think they're a team that's probably going to disappoint a little bit in the broader sense just because I think people saw them sign Kyrie Irving, saw them sign Kevin Durant and DeAndre Jordan, who I don't think either of us think that he's a massively impactful player from a wins-losses perspective at this point of his career. Value. So I think a lot of people are going to be looking at the Nets this year and think like, oh, that's a title-contending team just because of the offseason splashes they made. I don't think they're there quite yet. I do think that this is pretty comfortably a playoff team in the East. So for 43.5, I like the over, but the number I have, I like the under. I think they're probably somewhere in the middle, like in the 45, 46 win range.
Yeah, I've got them at 45. And interestingly, on Pinnacle, they have the odds of the under 43 is actually shorter. So it's $2.02 for over and $1.83 for under, which, again, seems wild. So they're again, heavily favoring that under 43, which seems like a pretty strong bet. But again, shop around. You can find different odds in different places to get these numbers. And yeah, that's all. We're going to sort of give what we think a win total is for the team and then look at those lines. We have to give somewhere as a reference that the lines are going to change. That is a significant change, though. Let's look at the Charlotte Hornets, who could be very easily the worst team in the NBA. I've got their line here at 23.5 wins. The Hornets last season won 39 games, but of course, they don't have Kemba Walker anymore. They're going with more of a youth movement. I can see them dropping down. Look, there were numerous teams last season. I think there were three teams last season that finished under 20 wins. I think the Hornets could challenge that. I think they're about 20 to 21 wins, so that puts them as an under for me at 23.5.
So I have them under here. I have a bet on them at under 34.5 wins.
What? That's crazy.
So what happened was the DraftKings Sportsbook left open the lines for the beginning of free agency.
Okay.
So when reports first came out that Kemba Walker was going to sign with the Celtics, but it wasn't made official yet, the line just remained up for a little while, and that was a really easy number at that point in time. So that's a bet that I like quite a lot. The 23.5, it's such a low number that I wouldn't feel comfortable betting it just because it's so easy to just kind of walk yourself into 24, 25 wins in a weak Eastern Conference. With that said, though, you look at this Hornets roster. Where's the usage coming from? Like, this isn't like baseball or football where a team could score 0 points. There are no shutouts in basketball. To figure out where the usage is going, like, Terry Rozier could legitimately be one of the league leaders in usage this season just because who else is going to create shots?
Yeah, look, he's going to put up a lot of shots. Look, they played pretty well in their preseason opener. In tomorrow's podcast, I'm going to be doing a preseason roundup for what we've seen so far. Just going down to the Celtics by 1 point. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything. And you said also about, you know, the weak Eastern Conference, but two of those sub 20 win teams last season were in the East, the Cavs and the Knicks. So it's not like that, despite other teams being bad, that you can't have teams that are considerably, you know, the worst in the NBA. And I think that's sort of where the Hornets are going to be sitting. And we're going to have that again with the worst teams in the NBA residing in the Eastern Conference, right down the bottom of those overall standings. The Chicago Bulls is an interesting line. I've got it at 32.5. I don't feel great about having it as an under here. Greg, you've taken it as an over. They won 22 games last season. So to get to 32.5, they have to win 11 more games. So an insight into my process here, I went through and looked at every team's, I've tried to predict every team's win-loss record, balance out, make sure there were enough wins across the league. And then I went and looked at the totals to see where they came in. I think the Bulls are going to be significantly better. I gave them 10 extra wins and had them at 32. They needed 11 to go over. So that's why I've got them as the under. But I could very easily see a situation where they win 38, 39 games even. I just think that winning, you know, an extra 15, 16 games is a huge, huge amount. Where do you have them?
So I have them slightly over here also. This is actually one of the numbers that's taken the most action. The Bulls, I have them over 27.5 wins. And I think most books started them at like the 26.5, 27.5 range.
That's an easy
one. And now most places, like not just Pinnacle, but like the DK Sportsbook, which I have them over 27.5. They're up to 31.5 there. It's one that's been on the rise, that's been taking a lot of money. Bulls roster, it's not all that much different from last year. Like, they added Coby White in free agent in the draft, and I don't think he's going to be a significant factor this year. However, they have a lot of young players that I just expect to be better. Zach LaVine actually looked pretty solid last year, particularly his efficiency after
it was great.
Season coming off the ACL injury. So that was really promising. I really like Wendell Carter Jr. a lot. I know that you like him also. Yep. Hopefully he stays healthy, because if he's healthy, that's a huge boost to their defense, because I think that he's somebody who, not necessarily in like the same category as like a Rudy Gobert or like Joel Embiid type player, but he is the type of guy who I think could have a significant impact on a team's defensive efficiency just by himself and being out on the court. He's that kind of impact of defensive player.
He's Al Horford. He's not Al Horford, but that's the sort of player he can become in terms of having a defensive impact and having an offensive impact as well. So yeah, I do agree with that. But adding Thad Young, adding Tomas Satoransky, getting hopefully a full season out of Lauri Markkanen and a full season of
Otto Porter.
Yeah, look, I think 10 wins is a huge jump, and it's completely reasonable. But getting to that 11 mark is a little bit harder to do. The Cleveland Cavaliers, speaking of teams that sucked, they're over-under. Is it 24.5? They won 19 games last season. So to get them to go over, you have to give them a 5 additional wins. Now, I guess if Kevin Love plays 70 games, could he be worth that? Could the addition of Darius Garland, could an improvement from the Padawan Colin Sexton get them there? Yes, I don't think they're necessarily going to get there. They still suck. I can't rely on Love actually being healthy all season. I can't rely on him being with the team all season. So I've gone with an under there. I do have them getting better than last season. I've got them at 21 wins, and maybe that's a little bit low, but I think the under is the right way to go here, and you seem to agree.
I like the under on the Cavs. They were not very good last year. They added Darius Garland, who I thought was kind of a nice boom-bust pick in the draft. The issue is they have so many guys on that roster do the exact same thing. Like, that seemed to be a weird team-building thing that we saw in the Eastern Conference in the offseason. Like, teams like the Cavs, the Knicks, they were like, oh, we weren't good last year. How are we going to improve? We're going to add 10 of the same exact player to our roster. So the Cavs, they have Colin Sexton, they have Darius Garland, they have Jordan Clarkson. It's so much overlap in terms of what guys do that it's going to make some for really odd lineups and odd chemistry when these guys are on the floor together. I don't see it working. The one thing that, like you said, could be a big boost for them is if Kevin Love stays healthy, which is a pretty big if, that's a big upgrade to them. And for fantasy purposes, I think this is a pretty good year to buy low on Kevin Love. He was a second-round pick last year because we were looking at that situation and seeing like, oh, he's somebody who is going to eat up a lot of the usage. And now because he got hurt last year, he's somebody who's going like the fifth round of draft. So that's somebody who I think is a good upside pick.
Yeah, yeah, definitely for Kevin Love, depending on where you get him in those drafts, there is value there. But this Cavs team is going to struggle. They had historically bad defense last season. And that's, I don't think it's necessarily taken any steps up with more games from Love and the addition of Darius Garland onto this team. Let's look at a team that I think is going to take a pretty significant step forward, and that's the Dallas Mavericks. But unfortunately, their win total is sitting at 40.5 over on Pinnacle. Last season, they won 33 games. I think they're going to improve significantly. Adding Porzingis. to this team. Second year of Luka Doncic, D'Lon Wright is a really good and wing impactful type player. I've got them going up to 39, which again, it still comes under that 40.5. But Greg, you've gone even further than that. So you're expecting 8+ win improvement from the Mavericks this season.
Yeah, I think that the ceiling for this team is really high. It's not a number I would bet on because I don't feel super confident in this one either. However, what's the most amount of wins that you would say you think is within the realm of possibility for the Mavericks? Because I would say that 41. Their ceiling is probably like 45, 46 okay. wins. I think it's possible.
I've got them as, I think 41 is probably best. Now, 42 maybe is best case scenario. I can't see them really pushing to 50. But Porzingis is really good. Maybe we're just forgetting how good he was back before that ACL injury. But again, if we talk about relying upon someone like Kevin Love for health, Porzingis had the ACL. He's fully recovered from that. We've got no problem. But it's not like he's ever really been able to stay healthy at any point through his NBA career. So there is concerns there with him missing 10 games, resting potential. And again, if that West really crunches them down, do they just become more cautious down the end of the season? So I think that's a concern there. But they are going to be, I believe, one of the most improved teams across the NBA this season. A team that didn't change a huge amount in the offseason is the Denver Nuggets. They come in at 52.5 at the moment. Last season, Greg, they won 54 games. So you'd have to get them to be, two games worse than last year. Now, they had some significant injury problems. Farton, Will Barton, and Gary Harris. Nice, Gary! They missed massive chunks of the season. They were never the same when they came back. So we're getting theoretically healthy seasons from them. We're getting Michael Porter Jr. back into the mix as well. I don't see how they're getting worse. I think there's a chance that they get better this season. I've got them at 55, so it's a one-win improvement on last season. So I really like this over here, but you disagree.
Yeah, and not really significantly. I think they're just going to be right around that number. They do have a lot of depth there, but still, I think Paul Millsap takes a little bit of a step back. He was a pretty key part of their success, particularly on defense in previous years. And I just don't know how much Michael Porter Jr. Is going to help. He was somebody who neither of us were all that high on as a prospect coming out of college when we did the podcast together.
Yep.
And I'm kind of concerned that if he's going to play a lot of minutes, I think he's going to take away usage from better players. I think he's going to hurt the defense. And I do think there's going to be a point where we're going to try to force him to play some minutes, at least in the early going of the season, to see how it works out. So that would probably be my biggest takeaway for why I think they're going to be worse, is just a year older Paul Millsap and then maybe forcing Michael Porter Jr. into the rotation. But it's not a super strong conviction.
Let's go to the Detroit Pistons. This one to me is a strange one. 37.5 wins they sit at. They won 41 games last season. I think that there's a chance that they can get better this season. Derrick Rose replacing Ish Smith is an upgrade. As much as I don't like Derrick Rose as a player these days, I think he's an upgrade over Ish Smith. A second year of Bruce Brown, a third year of Luke Kennard. I guess the concern you have there is Griffin and his health, because he was relatively healthy for most of last season, 75 games played. But I don't see them again in a weak Eastern Conference falling down by four wins from where they were last season.
I totally agree. And I think the one way that they would hit the under, like you said, is if Blake Griffin was to get hurt. And I mean, it is some risk, but how many games do we really think that he would be missing in that situation?
Because you'd have to miss 50 games, I reckon, to drop him that low.
I think that it's probably reasonable to say that he plays at worst, in the 60 to 65 game range. And I still think that would be enough to have the Pistons around 500 in a fairly weak Eastern Conference.
Well, the other thing, Greg, if he does get hurt, they've actually got someone who can replace him now. Markieff Morris isn't great. He's better than Thon Maker. So he can just step in there and actually contribute. And if they do the right thing and keep Christian Wood over Joe Johnson, that's another guy. So there is actually a replacement, someone who's a better than a replacement level player that can step in for Griffin. And they didn't have that last season. So I think we're underrating that Markieff Morris addition a little bit, because if Griffin steps down, he's not Griffin. We know that, but he can be okay, which should be enough to keep them from falling completely off the face of the earth.
Yeah, and then we just also have to hope that Andre Drummond doesn't shoot a bunch of threes, because I don't know if you saw that three-point attempt that he took in the first preseason game today. What I thought was really funny about it was not just how far off the shot was, but it was how confidently he took it, and he kind of had a swagger moving backwards after he shot it, as if yeah, I've got this, and then it hit the backboard going 50 miles per hour. So no threes from Drummond, hopefully a relatively healthy season from Blake Griffin. I think this is an easy over.
Let's go to the Golden State Warriors. They are set at 47.5. It is a tough one. We know the losses. We know Andre Iguodala, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson are all gone from a team that won 57 games last season. I had them, and it's surprising when I go through and do all the win-losses, how many come out almost exactly what the over-under is. I had them winning 48 games, so that's a really soft over. So I wouldn't want to bet on this one. D'Angelo Russell didn't look great in his first preseason game. I'll talk about that more tomorrow. But I have gone the over here, but it's as soft an over as you can get. Are you more bullish on that, or are you like in that cautious area?
More in the cautious area, and I take the over just because of how much confidence I have in Steph Curry. Yeah. Like, I think people forget how good he's been in the past. Like, he was a unanimous MVP. He's been somebody who, even the last couple of seasons, when Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson are off the floor, the numbers are ridiculous. Like, you look at it last year, he was... usage rate, he was scoring like over 40 points per 36 minutes. So I think Steph Curry should really light it up this year. He's my also favorite bet for MVP this season. So just because Steph Curry's there and on offense, that he's a game breaker just by himself, that I think he's going to be able to carry this team to the playoffs. I think they're going to have a solid record even in the Western Conference, just because I think Curry's that good.
Let's move on to the Houston Rockets, who came in with 53.5 wins. Greg, last season they won the 53 games. I think that they can be better than that. Not to say that Russell Westbrook is necessarily a better player than Chris Paul, but I have more confidence in Westbrook playing an additional 10 or 15 games versus Paul. And I think that's enough to give them not only just the one extra game that they had last season, or that they would need to go over. I've got them at 56 for this season. I think... if I go through my numbers there, I've got them projected to be the number one seed. Yeah, number one seed just in the Western Conference. So I've got them as an over. But you don't. You have them as an under. So you think they're getting worse this season?
Yes and no. I think their ceiling is higher this year than it was in previous seasons. But for the regular season, I think that there's going to be a growing process. And this is something we've done these podcasts the last few years together. And one thing I've always been consistent with is when teams make big moves, yep, where they add a guy like this, where – it's not necessarily clear what players' roles are going to be, and it seems like there could be chemistry issues, I always tend to lean towards the under, just because I could see where it's wonky, particularly in the first part of the season. Like, how do Russell Westbrook and James Harden share the court together on offense? I don't know. And it could be a disaster. Like, there's definitely a case where this team just totally blows up and they're towards the...
I think they can get to 60.
Six or seven seed.
I think they could go the other way. I think they could win 60 games here. I think that that's in play. It's not likely, but I think that that actually could happen, and they could blow up to that level as well.
I think that is possible. However, I also think the downside is possible, and we've seen enough of these situations over the last few years where even if they are playing to the 60-win level, I think it would happen towards the end of the season where they'd be really picking up steam. And in the beginning of the season, I just think there's going to be enough of a growing process. There's going to be enough chemistry issues where they're going to lose some games they wouldn't necessarily lose maybe either next season or towards the end of the season. So these situations, I always tend to lean towards the under. Like, we've seen it with the Celtics in previous seasons. We saw it with a situation with, like, the Heat, where that team, as good as they were the first season, there were some issues at the beginning of the season where they started, like, 18-18 or something like that, where it takes a while for talent of this level, where it's two high usage guys, to really meld together and figure it out on offense.
Let's move to the Indiana Pacers, who come in at 46.5 wins. They won 48 games last season. I've got them dropping a few wins this season. Look, they started out with some relatively impressive performances over in Indiana. I wasn't not sure still about the Sabonis and Turner fit. There's no Victor Oladipo for the first couple of months of the season. I've got them dropping down to 45 wins. I could easily be proved wrong on that one. I'm not super confident in this Pacers under, but you're going that direction as well. How far under are you going with them? Is it soft, or are you pretty confident with this?
I'd like them to go a couple games under. I think that the loss of Victor Oladipo is kind of being overlooked everywhere. Like, the number in their win total isn't all that much different than it was last year. In terms of draft stock, like, I wrote
about
this.
They also lost Bojan Bogdanovic too.
Oladipo's getting drafted way too high. Like, I don't think people are really realizing how much time he's likely going to miss at the start of the season. And then even when he comes back, he's probably not going to be at full minutes, and he's probably going to have a little bit of rust to work out off also.
Yep.
And then on top of that, as much as we like Victor Oladipo, there's a chance he's not the same player when he comes back. This is a really significant knee injury. So those are all concerns for me. I like Miles Turner a lot, but I think that he's somebody who has a chance to regress a little bit. In the past, the Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis combination hasn't worked all that well. Like, we look at the last couple of seasons, as a two-man group, it was a team that was not really significantly net positive. Like, it was right around a neutral combination. A bit of an issue for them because they're going to have to play together more this year. And while I think it is possible they work out the chemistry, it hasn't necessarily worked in the past. So I like the under for the Pacers.
Let's look at the LA Clippers now. Their over-under comes in at 54.5 wins. Of course, they added Kawhi Leonard. They added Paul George, losing Danilo Gallinari in the process and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They won 48 games last season. So this is a pretty significant jump up. I have them pegged for 55 wins, so I'm going the one over there. But I could see them, if the George injury lingers, depending on how much Kawhi sits out, that they could come in at 52 or 53. So it's a really, really soft over, depending on how much they prioritize the regular season, Greg.
Yeah, and the biggest hesitation that I have is the Paul George injury. We don't know exactly how much time he's going to be out, except we do know that he's going to miss games. One thing that I think is interesting for reference is the Clippers on DK Sportsbook were at 57.5 wins. Now they're at 57.5 wins. Now they're at 56.5 because of the Paul George news. So to me, that indicates a little bit of value in the 54.5 number that you're getting at Pinnacle. When they're healthy, it's just a little hard to know how much is Kawhi Leonard going to rest, how healthy is he going to be, how many games is Paul George going to miss. Hesitations, but to me, this is the best team in the league when everybody's on the roster healthy.
Yeah, that's how I see it. I've got them as my championship favorite as well. Let's go on to the next team, Greg. We referenced them a little bit earlier, the LA Lakers. They come in at 51.5, and I am with you that you normally should be looking at the Lakers as a really strong under team. But to me, this is an over, and that's the way you've gone. I've got them as a 53-win team. They won 37 games last season, but yeah, that 16, yeah, look at that 16 win. That's a lot. But that's Anthony Davis and hopefully a full season of LeBron James, and I think that those two can actually give you that level. 51.5 seems pretty low to me, so in a rare case, I'm going the over on the Lakers.
Same here, and I agree. It's almost a little cautionary. Like, why is the number so low, given what we usually see the reaction is to the Lakers? Like, it's pretty much the same number was last year when we both loved the under last year when it was at, like, 50.5 or something like that.
Yep.
So it's a little weird they added Anthony Davis and the number didn't move all that much. So I'm a little confused why that happened. The one concern I have with them is if LeBron James gets hurt. Because if LeBron gets hurt, this is basically what the Pelicans were last year.
They're rooted.
Yeah, if Anthony Davis gets hurt, and the Lakers are just in the same spot they were last year. So I think the number is too low if they stay healthy. But I think that there's, and I said this last year also, and I bet the Lakers to miss the playoffs. This is so much farther from a slam dunk than I think that Lakers fans on Twitter would like to think it is.
The interesting thing, again, on Pinnacle is the over is at $2.16 and the under is $1.72. So that's a wild difference there as well in terms of the odds you can get. But I do like that over, especially at those elevated odds. The Memphis Grizzlies, 27.5. Last season, the Grizzlies came in with 33 wins, but that was 60-odd games or 55-odd games of Marc Gasol. It was a full season of Mike Conley. We have neither of those guys. I can see almost a 10-win drop from them down to 24, so I'm going with an under. Greg, but you're sticking with the over there. You're just putting faith in having a coach who's an NBA, well, maybe he's an NBA-quality coach because we know that J.B. Bickerstaff wasn't, but the development of Jaren Jackson Jr. and a full season of Jonas Valanciunas and Ja Morant in there as well, you're taking the over of 27.5.
It's a low number. The number I actually bet is I have over 25.5 wins for the Grizzlies, okay. And I like that quite a bit. It's just I like Jaren Jackson a lot. The only real hesitation I have with Jackson is he going to be able to stay out of foul trouble this year? Like, I know there's some people who are super bullish on him for fantasy purposes this year, and I get that if he's able to play 30-plus minutes per game consistently, but I'm not totally confident that's going to be the case. But with the other depth they have there, like, I like Brandon Clark a lot as a draft pick. I love the addition of Jonas Valanciunas and signing into a long-term contract. So they have a lot of depth in that front court. I think they're going to be solid there. Morant is kind of – I could see the season going one of two ways for him. I could see him turning the ball over a lot and being inefficient on offense. But I could also see it being a situation where he really benefits from playing with NBA-level players around him, because a lot of the turnovers that he had in college I kind of attributed to him playing with lesser competition, lesser players, and guys who weren't able to handle his passes. I thought that added to his turnover numbers a lot. And he's also going to probably have less to do this year. Like, he's not going to have to take on the ridiculous amount of usage he had in college. So I could see Morant shoring up his efficiency, shoring up his turnovers a little bit in the NBA. So I think that the ceiling for the Grizzlies is right around like low 30s wins. So I think the 27.5 number is a little bit too low. And certainly the 25.5 that's available at DK is way too low.
I've got Memphis actually as the worst team in the Western Conference, even with Phoenix above them. So I obviously just think, look, these young guys, it's going to be exciting. I'm just not sure it's going to translate into wins for this coming season. The Miami Heat, they made some adjustments this offseason. They won 39 games last season. They're over under. Win total comes in at 43.5. I had them pegged at 44 wins, so a really soft over for me. That's the addition of Jimmy Butler. Hopefully you get a full season of Goran Dragic. You get a center who's not a nutcase in there in Bam Adebayo replacing Hassan Whiteside. You get a little bit more stretchability with more minutes for Kelly Olynyk, hopefully, than we saw last season as well. An elevation from Justice Winslow is a possibility. A healthy Deion Waiters. I think all those things, maybe a healthy Deion Waiters actually contributes negative wins, but I think they could take a step up, and I've got them as a 5-win improvement, which is a really soft over. Greg, you've got them under. So how far under are we looking here? Is this something that you think is a strong bet, or you got them at that 43 mark?
I think it's a bettable number, and the biggest concern I have with them is what is Jimmy Butler's health going to be?
Yeah, that's fair.
Because he's missed at least 15 games in 5 of the last 6 seasons. So to me, the chance of him getting hurt are way more likely than him staying healthy. And I think part of the issue is I've been thinking about a little bit about this lately. Same work ethic, and it's kind of twofold. It's one, he likes to work really hard, and then two, like a lot of people have joked on Twitter, he likes people to know that he's working really hard.
I
think that's what's contributing to his injury issues. Like the idea that he's like, oh, I'm getting up at 3 a.m. every morning to lift weights and go to practice. It's like, all right, that's cool, but you're also over 30 now. You have this injury history on a massive amount of minutes and usage playing with this Heat roster that doesn't really have a whole lot of playmakers and high usage guys. So I'm really concerned about his ability to stay healthy. And if he gets hurt, it's just not a very good team. So I think this is going to be a team that if everything goes right and Butler stays healthy, then yeah, they hit the over. But I just don't think it's all that likely he stays healthy. So to me, I think the most likely scenario is that this is probably a below 500 team.
The Jimmy Butler, I don't know if I've even talked about this on the podcast, the Jimmy Butler waking up at 3:30 thing and being, you know, lauded and praised and I hate culture, look how hard he's working, is just absolutely ridiculous. And I tweeted this out and people, oh, he's always done this. That doesn't mean that it's right. And then they'll get, that's fine, he goes to sleep at 7 o'clock. Also, so in the end, you're out there bragging like, look at me, I'm working while you're sleeping. You're also sleeping while others are working and doing other things. So you're up for the same amount of hours as anybody else is. So you're not actually changing that and you're so super hardworking. You're just getting up at a ridiculous time. But when the season starts, your games start at 7 p.m. And often if you're flying in between cities, you're getting to bed at 2 or 3 a.m. So basically, you're just working on a reverse body clock. Like that's not good for you. So you might as well just, you know, fly between continents between every game if you want to mess up your body clock and time zones and that sort of thing. So basically, through the offseason, he's working on a completely different time zone, like he's working out in Australia for that entire time. It just doesn't make any sense that you're not getting extra hours in because you're going to bed when everybody else is awake and doing things. And then all your timing is up. And it just like you said, it makes me think you're saying it just to put it out there that I'm working harder than everybody else when I'm not so sure that that's the case or it's the most effective way to work out. But anyway, the Milwaukee Bucks, Greg, 57.5 win their total is. They won 60 games last season. I'm not predicting them to win 60 again. I've got them at 58. That is a really soft over. But you've gone under. I can understand that. I think the reduction or the loss of Malcolm Brogdon replacing with Wes Matthews, another year older for older guy like Brooke Lopez, is a concern as well, even though the backup center has been improved by adding his brother. I think under is a legitimate call here. But how far down are you dropping them? Do you think they're still the one seed in the East?
I think they're probably the one seed in the East, but it's just a soft under for me for a couple of reasons. Number one, I really like Malcolm Brogdon a lot, and I think that he's somebody who massively contributes to winning basketball games. So I think that he's a big loss. And the other thing, too, is we saw in the playoffs that Giannis was kind of worn down, and something that he admitted himself, that he thought he went too hard in the regular season, kind of trying to maybe get like an MVP and maybe some individual accolades. And he's hinted that he's not going to go as hard in the regular season this year. He's going to want to be rested. He's going to want to take some games off, maybe play some less minutes. That's going to mean a couple less wins for the Bucks, just that in itself, because he's so valuable when he's on the court. Add those two things together, like you said, the advanced age of Brook Lopez, Eric Bledsoe, who has a pretty long injury history. He's not somebody who's really ever been able to stay healthy in back-to-back seasons. I think there's a lot of reasons to think this team is going to still be really good, but maybe not quite as good in the regular season because they have more of like championship aspirations, team that's looking forward to the long run of the season after what happened to them last year.
Yeah, and that's absolutely how they should be looking. So while I've got them at 58, it's as soft and over as you can get, and it's not something that I would be betting on. The Minnesota Timberwolves, 35.5, Greg, we both got them over. They actually won 36 games last season, despite the Tom Thibodeau nonsense to begin the year, the Jimmy Butler nonsense to begin the year. They've got a full season of Ryan Saunders. They're hopefully going to be running things a lot more through Karl Anthony Towns, which they should because he's their best player. They grab a guy like Jarrett Culver that hopefully can help them. Robert Covington's hopefully not going to miss 50 games as well. So, yeah, the over-under is expecting them to be at either the same level or worse. I think they're going to be a couple of games better. Therefore, I've gone with the over, and I like it a decent amount. How much are you in on the Timberwolves? I don't think they're challenging for a playoff swap, but I think they can be better than last year.
Yeah, I think that they're a team that's probably closer to 500 than they are to 35 wins or so. So I like the over here quite a bit. I think it's a number worth betting on. The other thing to consider is Robert Covington, I think, is somebody who gets really underrated by the general public. And it's kind of because of some of his inconsistent performances, some of his percentage for fantasy purposes. But with that said, he's a massively impactful defensive player. And if you look at his splits on off during his time on the Timberwolves were an awful defense when he was off the floor. When he was on the court, they were a very strong defense. So I think that's going to be really big for them, having him hopefully stay healthy. And then Karl Anthony Towns is somebody also who I think could really take a step forward and go from being a guy who's kind of like a low-end all-star to potentially being somebody who, in a best-case scenario, works himself into being like in the MVP conversation this season.
He, especially if they give him the ball more, he's a very good passer and they want to run him Jokic light style. That could really open up this offense quite a bit. So it's going to be really interesting. I think they are a pretty strong over there. The New Orleans Pelicans, they come in at 39.5 wins. They won 33 games last season, so we're expecting an additional 7 games to get them over that. That's the addition of Zion Williamson, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, JJ Redick, and of course the loss of Anthony Davis. But those other guys are really good players. So I can see a situation where they get better. I think they do get better. I don't think they get 7 games better. So I've got them at the under at about 36 wins. And I think this is one that is probably worth betting on because we talk about the Lakers and the Knicks and those public teams. With the presence of Zion, maybe the Pelicans are a little bit in that boat as well.
If memory serves me correct, I think this number opened up at 33.5 or 34.5.
That's wild.
And they've just become such a public favorite team where they've really got steamed. And I think that's what caused the number to jump so much. So now I think it's just gotten a little bit too high at 39.5. This is going to be one of my favorite teams to watch this year. Zion's height. I know that's a big talking point on Twitter right now, is people have absolutely lost their minds about how tall every NBA player is. And it just doesn't matter all that much. Like, I've seen some crazy overreactions where I actually saw somebody who, this isn't related to Zion, but somebody said that, oh, Donovan Mitchell measured at 6'2", and I thought he was going to be 6'4", so I have a ranking list and I'm lowering him on it. It's like, we've seen players and how they produce.
Yeah.
And the height, it just doesn't matter all that much. Like, there's no point where you should look back and be like, whoa, Draymond Green was only 6'5". Like, I guess he's not good anymore. No, that's what he's always been. He's always produced at that same height. There was no point where he was taller or shorter. He's going to be fine. He's, like, I understand that people are saying, like, is he going to be able to play center at that height? What I think people are missing out on is how freakishly strong he is. That's going to really help him get position against guys who are So I don't think that guys who are all that tall are going to be able to score on him easily, just because he's going to be so hard to move on defense in the block. So I think he's going to be really good on defense. I still think he can play center despite the height. And overall, the Pelicans, I think, are going to be really fun to watch, just not quite at that 500 level that they need to be to hit the over here.
PJ Tucker plays at center. He's like 6'4". Charles Barkley was like 6'3". Dennis Rodman was like 6'5". These guys weren't that tall. Like, Rodman, you know, could anchor a defense, and he is not tall at all. Charles Barkley is not tall. These are guys that go in there with either their freakish athletic talents or their freakish athletic strength. Zion puts both of those things together. So, you know, you can combine that strength of Barkley, the athleticism of Rodman, and he can play center at 6'6". Because again, if everyone's height is coming down an inch, then what does it matter? It's much like my argument, like, well, if all these power forwards don't want to play center, if they all just played center, they'd still be facing off against the same guy anyway. And this banging that they're so worried about wouldn't actually be a factor, because Davis would take on Aldridge, would take on Porzingis, would take on whoever it is that they normally would do at power forward anyway. They'd just be playing at center and the teams would make a lot more sense. Greg, your New York Knicks, the over-under is 26.5. That is not the amount of power forwards they signed in the offseason. They won 17 games last season. So to hit the over, they need to win an additional 10 games. So this is it's a pretty hard under to me. They are not that good, I don't believe. I've got them at 20 wins. Maybe that's being a little bit harsh, but they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt for the way they've played, for the way they've built teams in the past, and I will stick with that under, especially when the total is so high.
Really similar situation what we saw with the Cavs, where the Cavs were like, oh, let's load up on all these point guards who like to shoot a lot, aren't efficient, and don't play defense. The Knicks were like, all right, let's sign a bunch of power forward, center forward type guys, and now they're just going to play everybody out of position. Like, that's the sense that I get.
Yep.
And to me, there are some individual players I like on the Knicks. Like, I like Julius Randle a lot. I like Mitchell Robinson a lot. The issue is having all of these guys, and like Marcus Morris was solid last year, but now the idea where it's like, well, now we got Marcus Morris, we have to play him because he's a quality player. So they're going, we're going to play Marcus Morris at the three. We're going to play Knox at the two. This is just a disaster to me in terms of how they're going to be utilizing all these guys that kind of play the same position, because now they're just going to have a bunch of guys that are playing out of position. It's going to hurt them on defense, and they're not going to be able to space the floor on offense. Like, Knox is not a good three-point shooter. Dennis Smith Jr. is not a good three-point shooter. So I think there's going to be a whole lot of issues, not just in terms of the quality of the players on the roster, but also how they're utilized.
Yeah, I just don't see how they're winning an additional 10 games this season. There is just too many guys who need the ball in their hands or want the ball in their hands or refuse to not have the ball in their hands for it to work. And while they will be improved from last season, I have no doubt about that, 10 games is a big leap forward, and I don't think we're quite there with the Knickerbockers of New York. The Oklahoma City Thunder, this was a weird one, 31.5, and I like the over quite a bit. They won 49 games last season, so we are expecting them to drop, if you're going to the under here, like 20 games almost, 19 games. That is a lot, obviously, because I can count. Actually, it's 18 games, so maybe I can't count. But yeah, Chris Paul is really good. Danilo Gallinari is actually really good. Now there's a chance that they get hurt. There's a chance they get traded. That's all possible. But 18-game drop is pretty large. And while I've got them dropping down to around 40, maybe that's a little bit high. Even if they come in at 35 or 36 or 34, it's still an over. So I think this is a pretty good over to me.
This is a stupidly low number. And I think a lot of it is because there's so much public bias against Chris Paul. Yep. Like, people just don't like him. Basketball fans do not like Chris Paul. And it's really clouding the judgment in terms of how good he is, both as a real-life player and as a fantasy asset. Like, I was going through his fantasy ranks for his entire career per game. Last year was his worst season. He ranked 21. But if you took his numbers just in what he did with Harden off the floor, which is what he's going to be playing all of the seasons without James Harden, it was 22 points. It was 12.5 assists, over 2 steals, solid percentages. He doesn't turn the ball over a lot for point guard. Like, he would have been around a top 5 player. And he's somebody who, if he could stay healthy, which I think is a fairly big if, like, that's the question I really have about this team is, get out of Chris Paul, how many games do we get out of Danilo Gallinari? If they're all healthy, this is a borderline playoff team. So the 31 wins to me is, it's basically the floor. Like, the 31 wins is what happens if everybody gets hurt and then they trade away Chris Paul at the trade deadline. So I feel really confident about the over. I think of all the numbers you sent me, this is the one that I feel the strongest about.
Yeah, look, I'm pretty aggressively over on it as well. Again, even if those things do happen, I still think that they can maintain themselves in at least that mid-30s range and go over there, and the potential for them to actually, for a couple of months, they could challenge for a playoff spot. That probably doesn't last, but I think that is just way too low. For the Thunder, the Orlando Magic, they won 42 games last season, Greg. Their over-under sits at 41.5. I don't think they've gotten worse. I think Markel Fultz can actually be a contributor. Jonathan Isaac will be better. Aaron Gordon will be better. Evan Fournier should be better. Nikola Vucevic, he might not be better. In fact, he'll probably be worse. But I think that this is a team that can take a step forward. I've got them winning an additional game, and that puts them over for me, and you've got them over as well.
Yeah, and this is another number that I bet the over at 36.5 for the Magic. Like, I thought they were really good last year. And what a lot of the stuff they did last year, that even though Vucevic is probably going to take a little bit of a step back, a lot of the stuff they did well last year is very replicable. Like, they were a very good defensive team. I expect them to be really good on defense again. Jonathan Isaac has potential to really take a step forward this year, and I think that the upside for him is probably way higher than what most fans realize. He's somebody in a best-case scenario could be an all-defensive player as soon as this season. Just the issue is that he has to play out of position a lot, which is a little bit of an issue. Concerning, I think the defense is going to be really good. And then offense, I think they have just enough to be able to help out what they do on defense and be a team that's, like, solidly over 500.
the other thing with them is we do have to realize that last season no one was really hurt at all outside of Fultz. So Gordon and Isaac and Vucevic in particular just weren't injured. Fournier as well, and they were able to stay healthy, which should contribute to some of those wins. So there is some downside there with the Orlando Magic. The Philadelphia 76ers, 54.5. They won 51 games last season. They're swapping JJ Redick and Jimmy Butler out. They're adding Al Horford and Josh Richardson in. I think that they win more games this season because they have a full season of Tobias Harris. I think things make a little bit more sense with a Horford for Butler replacement in there and a Richardson for Redick as well, even though the shooting is going to be a concern. I think they can challenge for the number one seed in the East. And I think that they are a 53-win team, which doesn't put them over that 54.5, though. So do you think they're improving from last season, Greg?
I think they're a better playoff team, but I don't necessarily think they're a better regular season team. And I think that we're going to see some rest for Joel Embiid. I know that he's talked about playing 70-plus games and try to make all NBA teams. He wants to be in the conversation for the MVP award. That's all well and good, except if we look at how his season ended last year, I don't think that's the prudent course of action. Like, he was so banged up by the time it came to the playoffs, and that clearly hindered them. So I think they have to be a little cautious with Joel Embiid. If I'm them, I'm not rushing to play him in back-to-backs this year. Same goes for Al Horford, who's getting up there in age. So I think that just those rest games, which I think they should do, it seems like the rhetoric right now and the way Joel Embiid is talking that he doesn't want them to happen, I think they should happen. And I think this is a team that, just like last year, should be more focused on the playoffs than they are the regular season and kind of look at the big picture, because it definitely hurt them by playing a little bit too aggressively in the regular season.
Let's move on now to the Phoenix Suns, who come in with an over-under of 28.5. They won 19 games last season. So 28.5, we're expecting to go over, a 10-win improvement. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they'll win an additional 5, maybe 6 games. Greg, you've got them going over. So you must really love Dario Saric and Ravishing Rick Rubio on this squad. How far over are you looking at here for the Suns?
So slightly over. It's also that I'm hoping that Devin Booker will be able to stay healthy for all of this season. I think DeAndre Ayton could take a step forward. Like, he was somebody who I think we were certainly lower on him heading into the season and at draft time than the general public was, where I think that it was kind of a lot of sharp people and analytics people were kind of on the idea of, I'll take Luka Doncic first overall, and then the general public was saying, like, oh, you want to take Ayton first. And I think that there's kind of been a point now where Ayton's starting to be a little bit underrated, because I think that there's been so much pushback against the idea that Ayton was taken ahead of Luka in the draft that people have kind of overlooked that Ayton played well last year, and he's somebody who has a lot of upside and has potential to grow. So I think we're going to see a better year from Ayton. I think he's also going to be somebody who's really good from a fantasy perspective. On offense, I like the addition of Ricky Rubio, and Ricky Rubio, I think, is also going to help them on the defensive end. So I think this is a much more competitive Phoenix Suns team, the team that we saw really frequently get blown out last year, and also having Kelly Oubre for a full season helps.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt. They're better than last season. They're significantly more competent. I don't feel like saying that they're competent enough to win 10 or 11 more games. 5 or 6 is where I'll sit with that. That still leaves them under. But I wouldn't be surprised. Look, if you had told me last year that they're going to win 30 games, I would have said you're a dickhead and that's not going to happen. But this year, if it happens, I don't think that's totally crazy for them to get to that level. At this point, I'm just going to stick with the under on them. The Portland Trailblazers, 46.5. They won 53 last season, so that is a precipitous drop. To hit the under there, that is a 7-win drop-off. Now, there were fortuitous circumstances for them to get to the Western Conference Finals, not taking anything away from them in terms of winning against the Denver Nuggets, but with the way the things panned out, whoever out of that Nuggets and Portland series got to the Western Conference Final, it wasn't exactly a true representation of how things it could potentially have looked had things been equal. I hope I'm getting my point across there, but a 7-win drop is interesting. No Yusuf Nurkic, probably for most of the season, trading out Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu to get some more offensive guys in, Bazemore and Hood into the lineup more. They're starting Zach Collins at power forward. I've got them dropping off. I had them dropping off actually down to 47. I couldn't get them down under 46. You did though, Greg. So why, or how far down from that 47 that I've got them at are you at, and why?
A couple of things here. If you remember going back to last year, like, we both like them to go under by a decent amount last year.
Yep.
And it's not necessarily trying to hold on too much to the beliefs we had last season, but there was a reason we thought that. Like, we thought that they were a team that was going to see a little bit of regression. Damian Lillard's always had a great track record of staying healthy. I don't necessarily think it's a lock that he plays the like 70, 80 plus games that we've seen from him every season in the past. The other thing too is Nurkic was so good last season.
Yeah, he was their second best
player. Nurkic was the reason that they took such a step forward, even though he wasn't there for the playoff run. He was a big reason they had the seeding that allowed them to make a run in the playoffs. And I think it's such a big loss in the regular season to not have him anymore. Whiteside is kind of a wild card because even though I don't put a whole lot of weight into the idea of contract years, if there's any player you want to have in a contract year who might be motivated by that sort of thing, it's probably Hassan Whiteside because he's a guy who's really a dickhead a lot of the time and is not somebody who's always given his 100%. And I feel that this is going to be a season where, with it being a contract year, he's really going to try to cash in on one last big contract. But still, we've seen enough of him where he's been kind of a locker room ruiner, where he hasn't necessarily always played well on the court. But I think it's a really significant drop-off going from Nurkic to Whiteside, and that's the main reason that I think the Trailblazers drop off this season.
Some of the moves they made in getting rid of those defensive starters in Harkless and Aminu to get more offense in there, especially like with a Hood replacement, is interesting because they were the third best offense already last season. So how much better do they think they're getting in that offensive end? That's where I look. Maybe they go from the third to second best offense, but you could easily say they go from third down to sixth and actually get worse offensively despite concentrating more on that end. So that is something where I take that into consideration when looking at whether they're going to get better or worse. I do have them again at 47, which is a really, really soft over for this season. The Sacramento Kings, 37.5 last season, Greg. They won 39 games. They were the ninth seed. Now, they were a fair way out of the playoffs. They could have actually won a couple of more games, though, because once they were eliminated from the playoffs, some weird things started happening with their lineups and rotations. They replaced Dave Yeager with Luke Walton, and while Yeager coached the team well, he was also, speaking of dickheads, he was a bit of a dickhead off the court and clashed with the players and the front office. So he is gone. Second year Marvin Bagley, third year De'Aaron Fox, age 40 season for Buddy Hield, addition of Dwayne Dedman as well on this team. I've got them at 40 wins. I've got them improving. I don't think they make the playoffs. But you know, this 37.5 means they're getting worse than last season, and at least winning fewer games, and I don't see that. So we've both gone with over here.
I like the over also. I think it's a number worth betting on. And they have a bunch of young players that I expect to improve. Marvin Bagley looked really good last year. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox looked awesome last year. So if we look at this team from last year and we kind of say, like, well, why is it that they would drop off? I don't really see a good reason for it, especially because I think almost every player on that roster should be better this season than they were last year, unless we're just looking at Buddy Hield and saying, like, well, he's so old now, Buddy Hield, that this would be the point in time where he's past his peak because of we have no clue how old he is.
The other thing, I guess, with the Kings is you could look at them and say they're going to be a better team, which I don't think many people would argue, but maybe just because the other teams around them got better than what they are, that maybe that hampers their wins. But they also get... Now, I shit on Harrison Barnes a lot because of the money he gets paid. But he is still a very valuable... He's not that valuable, not worth that contract, but he is a solid small forward who is not Iman Shumpert, and that's already a step forward from where they were last season. He's not Justin Jackson. In fact, he's about five Justin Jacksons. So while he's not good, he's actually really, really competent and really valuable. And as a fourth option instead of a number one option in Dallas, I think he makes the team better. So to me, this is a pretty strong over. The San Antonio Spurs, Greg, I'm waiting for the Spurs fans to come after us here because they do it every time. You count out the Spurs all the time. And you know what? At 46.5, I am counting them out. I'm not counting them out. I'm giving them an under. They won 48 last season. I'm dropping them down to 46 wins this year. And again, you could say, well, Josh, they've got now DeJounte Murray back, and that's true. The fact, and I keep saying this on the podcast, LaMarcus Aldridge is 34 years of age. At some point, there's going to be a dip, whether it's 10%, 15%. Is it a Paul Millsap 20% fall off a cliff and a reduction in minutes? We've seen from Millsap, he still can be good, but in much more limited time. Yeah, where's that going to impact? DeMar DeRozan, he's also not young. How are all these things going to go? They somehow bluffed their way to a top 10 offense, I believe, last season, despite shooting absolutely no threes. Is that not going to stick? I worry that there is going to be a bit of a drop. So I've dropped them down two games this season, down to 46. How much further did you go down, or are you right about that same level?
I think the Spurs missed the playoffs this year. It's a really strong under for me. So they are getting Murray back, and I just don't understand how the spacing is going to work on offense. Because the fit of Murray next to DeRozan, like, Murray is Ben Simmons light, and then DeRozan shot 17 or 16% of whatever it was from three last year.
I think he only hit seven threes all season, didn't he? I'm going to look that up while you talk.
So what happened was, I was talking with somebody on this on Twitter the other day, is that DeRozan started the year shooting so poorly from three that I think that Popovich kind of took the stance where he was like, hey, you're not good at shooting threes. I always like my players to play to their strength. Please don't do it anymore. And that's kind of what happened, is DeRozan just decided, like, all right, so we're just not going to shoot threes anymore. It's not something in my arsenal. And when he was in Toronto, we would see him shoot threes in kind of like the 28 to 30% range, and he would just kind of be inefficient and take them from time to time. And that's just not something that's part of his game anymore in San Antonio. He doesn't shoot threes. DeJounte Murray doesn't shoot threes. LaMarcus Aldridge doesn't really shoot threes. Jakob Poeltl is probably going to be starting at center. He doesn't shoot threes. So what is this offense going to look like? The floor spacing to me is a huge issue. There's just not players on that team that shoot. The age of guys like DeRozan and Aldridge is also an issue for me. How good is Murray going to look coming off the ACL injury? How healthy is he going to be? Is he going to be limited at all? Is he going to be a lesser player than he was? I have a lot of question marks here, and the number to me is set at the exact ceiling of this team. Like, if everything goes right, I think they hit like 46, 47 wins. I think it's much more likely they're a team that hovers around 500 and probably misses the playoffs in the West.
DeRozan hit 7 threes last year, and over the final 35 games, he attempted 5 threes only. So basically just did not shoot them at all. So that's maybe the shooting percentage isn't going to be that much of a problem because he's just not going to take those shots. Let's look at the Toronto Raptors, your NBA champion Toronto Raptors. Their over-under is set at 46.5. They won 58 games last season. So the loss of Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green is big. Is it 12 games worth of big? Greg, you think it is. I've got them at 49, so I've got them at it. It's a relatively strong over. Lowry, Siakam, something from OG Anunoby would be good. A full season of Marc Gasol as well. So I've got them with an over. But how far down are you dropping the Toronto Raptors this season?
Just by a game or two, and it's mostly just because of overall workload and health concerns I have with them. I think Siakam's going to be great this year, and I think he is probably going to be the most valuable player on the team.
Yeah.
But I think there's also a negative impact of having such a deep playoff run last year. So Marc Gasol, he is an injury history, and they played deep into the season. He took a bigger workload. I think that that hurts him a little bit this season. The same could be said for Kyle Lowry, who has gotten hurt more years than he hasn't gotten hurt, especially in recent seasons. So I think that's an issue, especially because Kyle Lowry's probably going to have to take on a bigger usage rate this year with Kawhi Leonard gone. So I don't know how healthy some of those older guys who are kind of needed to be team leaders are going to be this season. Serge Ibaka, he's definitely somebody who we've seen dip in the last couple of seasons, so I don't know how productive he's going to be in terms of adding win-losses to the team. The team, they're going to be looking forward to the playoffs and defending their throne, defending the championship. So I think there's still going to be situations where they say, hey, we're going to rest Marc Gasol tonight. We're going to rest Kyle Lowry tonight. And also just the added concern of those guys just missing games because of general injuries anyway. I think they take quite a bit of step back in the regular season.
Let's look now at the Utah Jazz, a team which has legitimate chance to be the number one seed in the Western Conference. Their over-under is set at 54.5. They only won 50 games last season, but they did underperform, as they always seem to do, their expected win-loss number, which always seems to happen. They were expected win-loss of 54 games last season. I've got them stepping up from that 50 games last season to 52, but replacing the Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert front court with a Bojan Bogdanovic or Royce O'Neal front court is interesting. It's a change in what the Jazz are going to do, but adding Mike Conley should make them a pretty solid bet to improve. But I don't see the 5-game improvement, but you could very easily talk me into this one, Greg. We've both gone the under there, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if they hit the over.
Just such a big number in the Western Conference. Yep. Stuff. I bet the Jazz at 25-1 to win the championship. So I think this is a team that has a huge upside. I think they're going to be really good on defense. And I think come playoff time, they're going to be a force. The one question mark I have with them is Rudy Gobert has never stayed healthy in back-to-back seasons. He's kind of been a guy, he plays 80 games and the next season he's down to like 50, 60 games. We've seen this alternation pretty much every year of his career. So my question is he somebody who is capable of playing so in back-to-back seasons? We haven't seen that yet. So I'm a little concerned that that with this number, they can't afford for him to miss any games because he's so pivotal to their defense. They're going to be really good. It's just such a big number in a tough Western Conference that has me leaning towards the under.
Let's go to the last team in the NBA. The Washington Wizards, 28.5 is there. Over-under. They won 32 last season. We're probably not going to see John Wall all year. Bradley Beal, maybe he gets traded. This team is really bad. I've got them at 26 wins. Maybe that's even a little bit higher to me. This is a pretty strong under. You're leaning that way as well, Greg. I don't think they're quite the worst team in the league, Charlotte Hornets style, but they're not going to be far away from it.
I think they could definitely be in the running for worst team in the league. The other thing that you brought up is with Bradley Beal, is he going to be traded? The other thing, too, is he going to stay healthy?
Yeah.
Recency bias regarding injuries and guys staying healthy or whatever. We're only a year removed from people going into drafts, like really knocking Bradley Beal because of the idea that he can't stay healthy because of the issue with stress fractures in his leg. Now the narrative around Bradley Beal going into drafts this year is, oh, I'll take Beal at the end of the first round because he doesn't have injury risk compared to the other guys. I'm not saying he's going to get hurt. I'm not saying he's going to stay healthy. But there's way more risk of him getting hurt than I think most people tend to perceive. And if he does get hurt or traded, this team is going to suck. Like, that is a bad roster with Beal and a really bad roster without Beal.
Yeah, it is. It is bad. The other thing, mentioning about, you know, players being, you know, mentioned as injury prone. I've had people tell me that they'll take Jimmy Butler over Devin Booker because Butler doesn't get hurt. So things really, you know, can be skewed pretty quickly by narrative. Also had someone yesterday tell me that they wouldn't draft Anthony Davis number one. I need to see him play 75 games first. Well, he's actually done that for two consecutive years before the trade deadline. So people get something in their head. And it's hard to get it dislodged, I guess is my point there. Greg, before I let you go, let's go through some best bets here. My ones, I've got the Pistons at over 37.5, the Wolves at over 35.5, the Knicks at under 26.5, the Thunder over 31.5, and the Kings at over 37.5. What are your ones?
I have Boston under 48.5, like you also, OKC over 31.5. Then I have under 46.5 for Portland, under 46.5 for San Antonio. That's also one that I feel very strongly about.
All right, so there are our best bets for this season. We'll have a look at this at the end of the year. Greg, everyone can go and follow you on Twitter, of course, at GErenbergDFS, and catch all of your stuff over on Basketball Monster. What other stuff are you doing, TV's Greg Ehrenberg? What else have you got cooking up for us?
The name is back. So Sunday mornings for DraftKings, we do a stream. It's called the Sweat, and we just go over some bets for the football games and for overall football NFL DFS plays. And so you go check that out. Follow the Sweat on Twitter. We stream that on Sunday mornings. And then everything else that I write, I usually post to my Twitter account. So yeah, just follow me on Twitter at GErenbergDFS. We've got the basketball season starting soon, so we'll be having all our DFS content up at Basketball Monster.
Yep, go and check out Greg's DFS stuff over at Basketball Monster. Of course, subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and on YouTube. Give me a thumbs up, leave a comment, tell your friends, share it around, all of that great stuff. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and Instagram at @LockedOnFantasyBasketball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Crawford.